The topics discussed here tonight are general in nature, and you should seek personal advice before acting on any of this information. And now, on 2GB73, The Bottom Line. Thanks to IT Financial Services. High-quality financial planning. Visit itfs.com.au.
Yes, that's how a voice should sound. Now we've got Philip Tafe and Chris Maliki here this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, I suppose. You guys are looking much better.
Yeah, we're in the rhythm of being in here. And
Yeah. What's been the big financial news over the last month?
With markets, it's been very volatile, I think. You know, markets have been down and then up. And obviously at the moment we've got concerns around whether the UK will stay part of the Eurozone.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess, the big one weighing on people's minds.
Why is that such a worry? Because on the one hand, we hear that it could be dire straits if the Brits leave, and then on the other hand, we hear just how big and significant the British economy is and how they could survive on their own anyway, and markets just don't like change. That's the truth,
isn't it? I mean, the world will keep turning. We'll get back to business, but in the short term, there's huge implications because it means people who've invested in one particular way need to unwind those positions and transfer money into other areas. And so there's this shifting of wealth. And obviously, as an investor, you don't like that. You want certainty. And you lose some of that when there are these big political changes.
I suppose some cynic would say, oh, well, that's just rich people. But of course, rich people tend to manage a lot of not-so-rich people's money. And that's where everyone's involved, right?
Yeah. I mean, it boils down to your own superannuation, mainly, I guess. That's where most people would have some exposure, and you would see that impact on the bottom line, just like the name of this show.
That was a very, very good plug, yes.
Because, yes, it will cause some volatility. I mean, I was talking to a client the other day who said, oh, but surely this is known. It's all factored in. We can see what the bookies are predicting, you know, probably leaning towards the UK staying... part of the euro. So, you know, surely it's not going to have much impact. But, you know, people are speculating all the time and money's washing around and driving market up and down off the back of that speculation. So that's where you then see it influence the bottom line of your portfolio or your investments.
I mean, what politically speaking, what's worse, the British staying with a vote of 51% to 49, with the sort of Damocles over that for a while, or the British actually getting out and that'd be the decision?
I was reading a few things, and people are not too sure because it's just the uncertainty. It's saying like, oh, if it leaves, these are the positives, but these could be the negatives as well. So it's kind of uncharted waters. I think Greenland left 20 years ago or 30 years ago or something like that, and it was kind of a little bumpy, but that's just such a small country compared to the rest of it. So it's just no one really knows. That's what makes it the problem, I think.
And I think it's the flow-on effects that people are worrying about. So the UK goes, everyone else saying, well, I'll get out. I'll maybe renege on some of my responsibilities and get out of this mess. And that's what would cause the big concerns.
For an Australian listener who isn't an expat or have some sort of British connection, I mean, what's the big concern here? Where could we feel it either way come Thursday's vote?
Well, in currency movements, for one. If you've got money invested overseas, that could have a big impact if the Australian dollar fluctuates relative to whatever other currency that you've got your money invested in. So if you get that call wrong, it could have a massive impact on the value of your investment when it's converted back into Australian dollars. For businesses, I guess certain trade deals and things like that, probably far beyond my knowledge of any individual business. But, you know, if you've got deals tied up and you think, you know, it might be flowing through the UK and then on into Europe and then that doesn't work quite in the same way you'd expect, then, you know, huge flow-on effects for those businesses.
It's been all the bond markets as well. They've just been going in overdrive because no one really knows where they sit. So all the corporate bonds and the government bonds. So what return are you going to get for those? How long are they going to be paid and all that type of stuff?
Mm. Yeah, it's all very convoluted and very concerning stuff for some. If you've got questions, not so much about Brexit, I think, but certainly to do with your personal finance, give us a call, 131873. You know how the routine works, of course. Nothing has changed. The team here ready to answer your questions from IT Financial Services. Well, that's not it. Philip, you're here from IT Financial Services tonight, but Chris, you're wearing a different hat.
Yeah, so I'm working 23 beaches now. So still part as a sister company is IT Financial Services. So I still work in there, but kind of got another office in a different location
You've
now.
You've just got a coastal view.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sounds very
nice. Nice sea breeze.
Anyway, yeah, well, half your luck, yeah. Okay, so 131873, or if you can't get to the phone, send an email, we'll get that, tgb.com, click on feedback. Any questions? What is it, guys, about personal finance, super, investment strategies, real estate, these sort of things?
Yep, insurances, all that type of stuff.
Really, any question that is on your mind about money more than anything else, but not just that, it's about planning for the future, I think, you know, and financial implications are linked to that in every which way.
Yeah. Talking about money, investing for income. When one looks at, say, shares, maybe it's property, everybody's trying to chase a quid. I got a note from the tax, that reminds me, I've got to get in touch with the ATO about that. But talking about income, where is probably the best place to chase income through investments?
With the last, like at the moment, I think the Australian share market is yielding about 4.5%. And property in Australia is yielding about 3.5%. So at the moment, the Australian shares is probably the best part for income. But over the long term, I was looking at the averages over the last 20 years, property has returned, including income, it's about up to around 10.5%, while shares are at about 8.5%. So residential property over the last 20 years, there's been a bit more growth in the share market. But at the moment, this income, which is pretty important for retirees especially, because you need that income to live, has been in the Australian shares. And it's also got the franking credits as well, the rebates on that. So the 30% tax is already paid in a lot of cases, in a lot of shares. So if you're earning less than the 30% tax bracket, you're going to get tax back. Or if you're earning more than the 30% tax bracket, you only have to pay a proportion of that in tax.
We've got a pretty advantageous franking system compared to others, don't we, around the world? Very generous system, is that right?
Yeah, it's the fact that you actually receive a credit for the tax that the company has already paid, and you're not asked to pay it again or double up. So where Chris mentioned, you know, our market paying a dividend of, say, 4.5%, that really means, say, 6% plus when you factor in the franking credits being returned back to you. And that's where it becomes particularly attractive when you compare it to other options like property. When you look at property, particularly in Sydney, most people are not banking on particularly high, rental returns. In Sydney, it's all about what capital gains are you going to receive, and hopefully the value goes up over time.
Yeah,
and that is forcing a lot of people who like investing in property to look outside Sydney at the moment. I mean, just anecdotally, there are a lot of people that come into our office and talk about, property spruikers, particularly around Brisbane and also other more regional areas. And people are doing that because, you know, they look at a property in Sydney, and if you're only getting maybe 2% after you've paid your costs in rental return each year, that's not great. You can pretty much get that by putting your money in a bank account. Mm. So people have been forced to look further afield.
It's hard to know where to strike with property. Like anything, you want to buy the worst house in the best street or whatever they say. But yeah, I suppose one indicator of knowing whether the high-speed rail line's ever going to get built is if you look at where the smart money is. If all of a sudden property prices in Goulburn start going through the roof, yeah, you know the tracks are about to be laid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm particularly concerned about a lot of these new developments, which people are getting into for, you know, often tax reasons, because you get all these write-offs for depreciation of, you know, the building or fixtures and fittings and things like that. Mm. But for me, that's not the right decision. It's not the right reason to make an investment decision purely based on tax. You've got to analyse that building. Is it in the right spot? What are the growth prospects, you know, in that area? Like you mentioned, are there public transport facilities being put in that will drive demand and people wanting to live in those areas? Because there's going to come a turning point where there's been a lot of development, and then we have to fill those places with either tenants or, you know, yourself living in it as a home. So a lot of these investors, you know, could find themselves in a bit of trouble if they're banking on large capital gains very, very quickly to get their return, because, it may not necessarily come in the way of rental yields.
In your knowledge, how overexposed are Australian banks to potential difficulties in the property market?
They're highly leveraged to it.
Yeah, so if if yeah, so they've got a lot of money invested into people being able to pay back their mortgages. If property prices, that's why they got really tight on their lending procedures, because if the property market fell a lot, there's going to be, if people need to pay extra, or the, you know, their loan's worth more than the house, it just creates a massive issue in the economy, as we saw in the US. Mm. And it can cause a lot of issues. So they're trying to tighten it up in a slower manner at the moment, so there's not a big shock. So hopefully that doesn't happen, like we don't have another GFC or anything, and or unemployment grows dramatically where people can't pay their loans. That will cause a lot of issues.
And this is why APRA is doing what they're doing quietly behind the scenes, right?
Oh, we're definitely seeing a tightening in lending standards. You know, again, I just see people in our office who once upon a time, say 10 years ago, would have been able to walk in and get a loan very, very simply. They're now having to jump through hoops. So that's probably a good sign. That's what, you know, one way of, I guess, slowing down the crazy levels of borrowing. But if there was a sudden downturn, then absolutely our banks are exposed. But if it's managed well and it's, you know, just, I guess, a gradual wash through the system, then they're pretty well positioned to ride it out.
Mm. All right, there's a few calls waiting. What we will do, we'll take a break, then we'll come straight back to the calls. If you would like to join the queue, 131-873 is the open line number. Philip Tafe and Chris Malicki are here, ready to answer your questions. Just about to go 20 past 12. Let's get your questions. That's what this hour is all about, your personal finance questions. 131-873 is the number. Philip and Chris are ready to take your call. Guys, Nick's here. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are we going?
Good, thanks, Nick.
You can hear me all right on the phone there?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Look, I own a unit here in up near Hurstville area. Mm-hmm. And recently we bought it's being built at the moment on the Gold Coast.
Yep.
It's on the north side near the, right near the harvest, what is it, the North Harbour, it's a massive, like a, Westfield, and it's just been constructed. They're doing some, putting a lot more development into it, and they've also got the hospital nearby, and, there are a lot of hospital staff looking for, accommodation, so it's not going to be holiday rental, is going to be full-time occupancy. It should be all finished by about early September.
Yep.
So, yeah, and we haven't bought it for the get-rich-quick. I'm looking at getting it for the long term, and I'm 46 now, and I'm looking at handing it down to my little son or something he can... but also for our retirement... and then maybe in about another 5 or 6 years' time, when because we'll be able to accelerate paying the place that I've got now off here in Sydney,
yep.
I might be able to buy another place. At first, I was a bit scared and all that because I've never done it before. But I mean, I was told by friends and that you got to take a leap. I mean, you got to take that leap, or else when you get to 65, you don't want to regret thinking, "I wish I had it."
No, Nick, I think you're saying all the right things in that you've done a lot of research, you know a bit about the area and what's going on. You're talking long term, so you're not looking to just flip it a couple of years later and expecting to make a large profit. So, you know, you're doing it all the right way from that perspective. And the whole approach of, yeah, you're better off doing something than nothing in life, because if you just sit there on the sidelines and bank your money, you're not really going to get any gains or growth or be leveraged to what goes on with the Australian economy. So... from that point of view, what you're saying stacks up.
It can be a bit risky as well. That's the other, on the flip side, that you need to understand that if you're borrowing to invest, you've got to look at the capital growth that you're going to get and the rental yield. So you really got to do those figures. And some of those people that sell the properties, they give you figures, but you're best off seeking alternative advice, maybe from an accountant or a financial planner, and asking them, or if you can do it yourself, seeing what return that they would expect, a realistic return. Sometimes those returns are quite inflated, so something to watch out when you buy, if you buy further properties as well.
Because the other thing is, like, I won't have enough for what Super's going to give me when I retire. So this is something else that I need to do. And I've left it very late. Like, I didn't buy my first property until I was just hit 40 years old. So I really left it very late, but. Better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, there's going to be a time when, because all the properties have gone up, and there's going to be a period where the properties won't appreciate as much for a period of time. So the last couple of years we've had 10%+ returns, but there will be periods like before that. I think in the early 2000s there was a period where the growth rate was probably zero after inflation for a couple of years there. So it's about timing as well. So if you've got realistic expectations on the growth rate, people are saying they're going to get 7, 8, 9, 10% per year. I don't think long-term that's probably probable over year on year. If you factor in a rate of around 3 or 4% growth, that's probably a safe way to look at it.
All right. Thanks very much for that.
Pleasure. Nick, thank you for taking the time to call. Good luck with your investment there. 131-873 is the number. A lot of people investing in the Gold Coast, and these they were big in the 80s and the early 90s. They're coming back again in fad, aren't they?
And we've seen boom and bust in that region.
Yep.
I mean, certainly they went bust bigger than most during the financial crisis. A lot of those are, you know, beachside apartments, surfers paradise, things like that.
Does it correlate with an uptick in the sale of white shoes? Boom and bust?
I don't know.
No. Just a question. 131-873. Vasco, thank you for holding on.
No worries, Michael. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Morning.
Just wanted to, give some feedback on the whole Brexit discussion. So I guess it's somewhat related to the Australian market, but I was in Uber in Sydney on an Uber ride with a Nigerian driver, and I mentioned to him about the whole instability in the UK, how they're trying to, stop the flow of immigrants coming from within the EU into the UK, taking, jobs from local people and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always found it difficult to comprehend how we're a Commonwealth country, we have the Queen, yet we can't easily migrate there.
Yeah.
But the Nigerian guy, apparently they're the world's best at Scrabble. They even beat the UK, which is interesting. And I verify this is as fact, but...
it's always good to get your financial advice from a Nigerian Uber driver, too.
Well, it doesn't sound good. If it's a bank email scam, then you know what's going on. But
I was
going
to say, this was a very long Uber ride to get that bit of information out.
It was. But what's interesting about what he said to me is, he goes, it all makes sense. If they can get out of the EU and open up their immigration policy for Commonwealth countries, then they'll actually bring in skilled workers. So I'm a systems admin worker within IT. I've got a computer science degree, and I've considered going to the UK, but there's a lot of hurdles to get there. So I'm wondering, with the whole speculation around the market, whether you guys think there is, some truth to that, or whether the UK might consider at some point down the road to ease the pain from leaving the EU by opening up to Commonwealth countries.
I mean, I don't know specifically on that point, but, you know, there are going to be some positive effects for, you know, different countries and different workers if they were to, you know, leave. The negative side would be the fact that, you know, if the UK leave, that's probably a negative for Europe. China's biggest trading partner is Europe.
Yep.
Therefore, that affects them. China is our biggest trading partner. That then affects us. So everything is linked in some way. But obviously, there'll be winners and losers in the process.
Yep.
I mean, the overall point, and Vasco might have a thought on this, or maybe the driver he spoke to did, is, you know, could Britain actually come out in front? I mean, yes, for other players in the short term, there could be a few jitters and a few people, you know, long-term investment strategies need tweaking, but... thinking, say, 10, 20 years down the track, could Britain be a more dynamic, stronger, broader economy than what it is under the semi-restricted nature that Europe and its parameters put on it now?
I definitely think Vasco had a good point there. If you've got more skilled labour and it's like the smarter country and where they're actually innovating, so like Silicon Valley and all the businesses that have been created out of there and how much value that makes, like the Google and Apples and all that type of stuff, if you've got that type of economy, it does help your country overall.
Mm. Yep. And even with us here, we've got Atlassian, which is now in the US. I guess it was a lot easier and convenient for them to go there. But if there was an option in the UK, I'm sure you'd have Aussie tech startups that will go there and make a mark for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Vasco, next time you have that driver again, give us a call back. It's interesting fellow. Thank you, mate. Take care. Thank you for the call. It's 27 past 12. Genevieve is here. Good morning, Genevieve.
Good morning. Have I got enough time? Is there a news coming on?
Not for a while. You've got plenty of time.
Well, I have a rather complex problem which is worrying me.
Okay.
I'm in my 80s and I'm in a retirement village, and I have a daughter and two grandchildren grown up, and they all don't manage money very well. And my daughter helps me once a week. She helps a lot, but she's difficult. She's 1 minute nice and 1 minute cranky.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make her an enduring guardian. Now, I went to Perpetual Trustee, but the woman was so rude, I feel like doing a complaint. but I don't want to deal with them. You know now mm-hmm. that they cost a lot.
So the question, Genevieve?
The name of a solicitor in town, but he doesn't do house calls. So he gave the name of a man who does estate matters in the Upper North Shore who's been well established. Because I have to give an enduring power...
Power of attorney, is it?
An enduring power of attorney. You see, there's two lots. There's a power of attorney, which ceases when you get incapacitated, mm-hmm. and there's an enduring power of attorney in case you go to the nursing home. Well, both sides of my relatives live to 100, and I'm in my 80s, so I may live a long time. And everybody's getting impatient and wants the money.
Did you speak to that solicitor, Genevieve?
Pardon?
Did you speak to that solicitor and get some advice that
Not yet. I thought I'd write him a letter with point 1, 2, 3, what I want, and then ring him up. But the thing is, my daughter has a signature on 2 cheque accounts now to pay bills in case I get to the hospital or something. And most of my bills are by direct debit, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And also, I'm a very conservative real estate, and for 20 years I've been I've done the course and I've done all sort of courses. And I had some rundown property which I, fixed up over the years, was given to me by my father. Can you imagine? Out of very been bad repair and rent control, and I managed to get rid of all the rent control tenants.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
Yes. I was just being nice to them, and, it was amazing how I got... Maybe I was lucky.
Yeah.
Anyway, I finally sold the properties after 40 years at a great, great profit, because no capital gains tax. You see, I'd bought them so long ago.
Yep.
And I couldn't face any more estate agents or tenants, good and bad, so I decided just to put it in IBD in the bank. I know it was wrong, but I'm old, and I don't want to be bothered with all that. And now the interest rate's going down and my income is halved. And I want to know where I can get some literature about enduring guardian. Can I put it in restrictions? Like, can I put a letter attached to that? What are my wishes or what?
Well, let's ask the boys. What do you reckon, guys?
Well, I think you definitely need legal advice for a start. So, if you've been referred to the solicitor, you need to talk to them. If you want a good referral, we can do exactly the same.
It's a solicitor in Upper North Shore, and he's about 50, which means he'll be there for quite a while, I hope. And he's been doing it for years and years, all estates and power and everything. But I'm confused between what enduring guardian does and what a power of attorney, and I could do a partial power of attorney and an enduring power of attorney,
well,
and then I've got to make them executors of the estate.
Just hang on a sec, Genevieve. Let's see. Is this in your field of expertise, guys?
So look, very simply, a power of attorney is where you're giving somebody else some kind of... it's a very powerful document, which is why in New South Wales, when you sign it, you actually have to be in the presence of a solicitor, because they need to... understand that you, I guess, understand exactly what the power is you're signing over. And in this case, a power of attorney would be used, for example, by your daughter to be able to settle any financial aspects, control your bank accounts, pay bills and things like that. Whereas an enduring guardianship document is more around medical issues and decisions around when life support could be switched off and, getting down to those kinds of horrible decisions.
So there is that distinction there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Genevieve, did that answer part of your query there?
Well, the thing is, I only want to give my daughter small things like the checkbooks, because she's married twice, gambling mother's boys, and they gamble a bit. They go on trips. They're spending a lot of money.
Playboys, by the sound of it. So how does she do that?
Unfortunately, I think once you give a power of attorney, it's the full gambit. There's no half power of attorneys. It's just one or the other.
So legal advice.
You have to have absolute trust in the person that you give that to. So if your daughter's not the right person, you need to seek out somebody else, or potentially have somebody like a solicitor act in that role. The catch with that being is that they charge a fee, so it can be expensive.
Yeah. All right. Excuse me. Genevieve, we'll leave it there because the clock is now against us. I hope we did help you somewhat there, and I think the takeaway message is that fellas seek further legal advice to be clear.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Thank you. It's 28 minutes to one. Back in a sec. Busy morning talking personal finance. A couple of spots there. We'll get back to calls in just a second. 131873. Understanding where you are financially can be obviously daunting, that is without IT financial services, because they demystify financial jargon, they provide clarity to your goals and aspirations. They'll also help you to develop your financial blueprint to work towards your lifestyle objectives. So from financial lifestyle coaching, financial risk profiling, strategies and investments, to real-life financial solutions, just make one call to IT Financial Services on this number, jot it down, 9258-7500, 9258-7500, or you can go online, itfs.com.au, IT Financial Services, Australia's own high-quality financial planning company. They could make a real difference to your financial future. IT Financial Services, call them, 9258-7500. Patricia's done that in a sort of a roundabout way this morning on the open line. Hi, Patricia.
Oh, hi there. Mine is a little bit complicated, but the lady you were talking to a little while ago, the guardianship and power of attorney, all that is terribly difficult for people like us. I don't have any relatives, but I have a substantial estate, and I've tried to do business with the guardianship tribunal. I find all the legal ladies and everybody are very, very bossy. Very hard to get on with.
Yeah,
we depend on these people. People like us. I don't know how people cope.
And so you're seeking a little advice, are you, Patricia?
Well, yeah, I was wanting to have put my affairs with the public trustees, but have my own accountant every year do audit on my money.
Yeah.
But they admit they won't allow you to do anything like that. Apparently, they are totally in control and. Whoever takes you on can just do as they like. The public doesn't. There's no control over them. They're a public. What do you call them? Bureaucrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's your experience of the public trustees, fellas?
It's exactly the same. They do can take control of stuff, and you don't have a lot of say. So I've had clients with kids as well, and they've gone into a nursing home with dementia, and the kids have been trying to access money for the parents and stuff, and they have found it very difficult.
They just do as they like.
Yeah.
They don't take any notice of you. They take over your will. I had a will, a trust taken from me for no reason. I've been very good to this person, no reason. These people, the government should come in. Because it is a government department, isn't it?
Yeah, is it a...
State government.
Did you signed up to use them yourself, Patricia?
I'm wanting to, but right. I'm scared now because they wouldn't allow me to bring in my accountant in. They wouldn't allow me to...
Well, I think like anything else, to be honest, you should seek a second opinion.
I've been to... Nobody wants anything to do with the power of attorney and injury and guardian. Solicitors don't want to be an injury and guardianship to anybody.
Oh, no, absolutely there'd be some solicitors that would operate in that space. Not everyone. And absolutely, on certain issues, we'll deal with solicitors who'll say, no, that's not my specialty, go talk to this other person. They're willing to do it.
But they can die. You've got to go with a firm, surely, or something. I mean, if they die, then who takes over the firm? Affairs are up in the air. If I could, from your firm, I'd be willing to find a solicitor firm that handles this.
It's obviously a personal and complicated matter. If we put Patricia in touch with you guys and talk off air tomorrow or something, is that maybe the best thing, guys?
Absolutely, because Patricia, I do think there are firms that, you have to get comfortable with them, but if you... I mean, it sounds like you probably need a firm that has that personal touch, but where you also feel that there are generations of people involved who understand you. And there are firms like that. You know, it might be a smaller family firm that works perfectly for you.
I've got two sons. They both need... They cannot manage money. They will both need looking after for the future.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a solution. So, like Michael said, please, give us a call in the office tomorrow and... We'd be more than happy to put you in touch with someone that might be able to help.
Patricia, just do us a favour. Hold on the line there. I'll pop you back to the switch and they'll give the number for IT Financial Services to you, OK?
Thank you. I just took a 9529258750. Was that the number?
Well, that should get through. Yes, well done. You're one step ahead. Well done, Patricia.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. OK. Well, it's a bit of a theme so far, isn't it, with some of these calls this morning? What to do... when you're no longer there to do it, you know, for the future generations.
And really difficult in that case where, you know, your children may not be the most appropriate people to step in, because normally that's who people are giving power to. But you know what? If a child's off the rails or they're not financially savvy and you've got no one else to help, what do you do?
But equally, I mean, a lot of people think when people say the kids can't handle money that they're sort of playboys and whatever, but there are a number of circumstances where there are elderly parents, but they have a child and the child's intellectually disabled and they're terribly worried that when they pass on, that that child, who's an adult, will be looked after financially and someone won't come along and just steal the money or marry them and take the money and divorce them on the spot. And
they do.
And there's awful people who do it.
Yeah, we have a disability trust and stuff for children that need help throughout life and life interests in the home and stuff, so they really can't, that stuff can't get taken off them. But, you know, it's really hard to protect everything when you're not around to be able to see that. And you really need a solicitor that you can trust.
For someone with you know, particular needs like that, often a will have a testamentary trust built into it. So, you know, the assets would flow into that trust. You know, the person in need would be the beneficiary of that trust, but then you appoint somebody to control the trust and be trustee and hopefully make the right decisions in managing it. But again, the difficult decision is, well, who's going to outlive me? Who do I trust completely to have that power? And, yeah, if you don't have family members that are suitable, it can be very difficult. There are absolutely, though, law firms that specialise in those areas, but you've got to be willing to pay because, you know, that's how they make their money.
Indeed. Brought, I suppose, tangentially to all of that, the rising cost of raising children and how best to fund it. Someone who's just got married and you think down the track, well, maybe some kids one day and then maybe, hopefully, a good Anglican school, et cetera, et cetera. Gee, I'm going to have to get the breakfast shift pretty soon to fund it.
And
life's expensive.
Yeah, I saw that it's 35% of like the private school fees are paid by grandparents or partly funded by grandparents. So that's it's a huge thing.
I hope they're listening.
Yeah, well, that's the first one. Be nice to your in-laws. First bit of advice.
But before you get to that point, to be honest, often the biggest cost with having a child is not the schooling, because that's a decade away potentially. It's the loss of the second income. Because normally these days, husband and wife are both working, at least early on. But someone has to stop or step back, and that's the biggest hit, you know. That's a lot more expensive than having to fork out $1,000 for a stroller. So it's planning for that and doing some, you know, really detailed budgeting on, well, how long can we afford to have off? And can we afford to rely on one income indefinitely? Or have we only got 6 months up our sleeve before the other spouse has to go back to work?
It's a testament to just how hardworking, successful a lot of, say, Sydney families, young families, actually are, because there's the stereotype, all these young people are bludgers. And but the truth is there's tens of hundreds of thousands of young couples out there with children.
Mm-hmm.
Who are saving, they're paying off a mortgage, ridiculous mortgage, historically speaking. They're paying relatively high levels of tax. They're getting no return on whatever investment they have.
Mm-hmm. Childcare fees.
They've got childcare fees. They've got the kid about to go to school. It is a difficult financial environment.
A lot of people, you know, behind the scenes might actually go backwards through that period, but they juggle funds in a way that allows them to take some time off. So, you know, these days a lot of people have offset accounts or redraw facilities on their loan. So while the going's good, extra money goes in, and then they go backwards for a period of time while they take some time off work and raise children. But that's not for everyone. You know, not everyone has that capacity. And then it comes down to, some serious budgeting and, I guess, you know, cutting corners on some things and not being able to afford every luxury that you would quite like to have.
You do. Sacrifices or something, huh?
Yes.
131-873 is the open line number, 131-873. Hello, Wayne.
Oh, hello, Michael. Good to hear you back on the airwaves, mate.
Thank you.
I was just listening to that lovely dear lady. There's been a couple who have been on, but just reiterating similar sort of sentiments with the public trustee. Our family is, we've recently had, when I say recently, nearly probably 18 months now, had a multi-million dollar estate, superannuation, investments, property gifted to us, to a member of our family. And it was all handled, unfortunately, now that we know, by the public trustee. And but for it is, they are a law to themselves. They absolutely made our life miserable for our family. And took the princely sum of nearly $80,000 a year. And
And I can say that because the family knows that has the invoices basically to prove it. So meter out everything, and it was unbelievable. You know, the way that the property was sold, and there was obvious collusion between the way it was sold and between the
people. Well, once you've used that word, be careful, Wayne. But look, I have to say, broadly speaking, I've heard a lot of bad stories about the public trustee too.
I've seen exactly the same.
On the open line.
Yeah. Mm. With clients, I mean, I had one, not even millions of dollars like Wayne's talking about. This was an estate that had no more than, I think, $100,000 in it, and it was just a simple bit of super and a life insurance policy, and that was tied up for about 2 years. The client ended up paying an external solicitor to step in and write about 100 letters back and forth just trying to speed things up, and she then incurred costs from two different sources. Mm. So, absolutely, I hear the same stories. And this is where people need to be aware, because often the public trustee will do the dirty work up front quite cheaply. There's your will. And then when you get caught is at the end. You know, when the estate is actually formed, they step in, and that's when their charges...
But you see, they must exist for a reason too. I mean, these public bodies don't just come out of nowhere. So there must be a client base there that rely on this service. Right.
A huge client base, because, again, as one of our previous callers said, she just doesn't have anybody else that she can rely on. So what's your alternative? You have to go to the public trustee, unless you've got a particularly trusted relationship with a solicitor who operates in that space.
Mm. I think they need to run very by the book, and there's no flexibility, and they've got these rules and they can't bend at all. So that, I think they might be in a tough place as well, because you expect a bit of... understanding when you're going through those times, but they're going, no, this way, this is the way we need to do it. So I think it's tough. So you really need to think deeply before you enter that relationship with the public trustee, if that's what you want.
It's understandable, yeah. Wayne, thank you. We'll take a break. It's 13 to 1. Back in a sec. Yes, here with Philip Tave and Chris Malicki this morning. We've got about 8 minutes left. If you've got a question, 131873, anything to do with personal finance, wills, mortgages, property. We've had a lot of different stuff so far this morning. Actually, it's opportune we've had a few of these calls, because on the cheat sheet you did want to talk about when to update your will and when does your will become invalid. Good questions.
Yeah, so a will can become invalid, like if you get married or divorce, make a new will. So there's a lot of areas there where people just don't update it. Also, work with your super, if you've got a beneficiary on there. Some people, I've had a lot of clients come in and they've nominated an ex-spouse as a beneficiary but haven't bothered to update it. And if it's a binding beneficiary, if that person passes away, it just goes to the ex-spouse, and the current children or current spouse miss out on all what they should have got out of the estate. So it's huge. I think the suggestion is that you need to look at your will every 3 or 4 years just to make sure it's valid, binding, still applies. There's no new wills out there. There's nothing out there. And just to confirm, like, because sometimes if you make a will and just say you get dementia and it creeps on, there can be arguments that you weren't in the right frame of mind to make that will and make those promises. So there can be a court case there. So you really just need to keep on top of it, because it's hugely important, especially if there's a bit of an estate there as well.
The other one is the jurisdiction of the will. So I had some clients in last week. Came from Canada. I said to them, have you got a will? Yep, it's over in Canada. But that's useless to them because all their assets, their home, their bank accounts, everywhere they're planning, they're planning to live in Australia for the rest of their lives. So that Canadian will is really quite useless. They need a New South Wales will.
The Canadian paper's not recognised in the court, is that what it is?
That's right, I can't deal with assets in New South Wales. And that's often the case if you've got... property in the UK and then something in Australia as well. You actually need two wills. Mm. You need one over there and one here. So that's where, it's getting well beyond, I guess, our expertise, and that's where, you need a solicitor. But like Chris said, I've also had a scenario with superannuation where an elderly client, she came in, she said, I have three children. I want them listed as my beneficiaries. So I'd, take her at her word for that. And then when she passed away, it turned out that one of those children was not her biological child. she, it was just her husband, that was his child. She had never been formally, her, you know, legal guardian of that child. So he was not a legal beneficiary of her super. So what the trustee of the super fund did was to say, well, we can't pay it to the third child. The other two just get it split 50-50. Thankfully, in that circumstance, the children were all friendly and they just divvied it up amongst themselves. But that could have caused all sorts of dramas for that family.
You end up losing it all in the courts through legal fights.
But to be honest, there's probably not a lot they could have done in the courts because as the rules stood, it was a binding nomination and it had to go that way and the trustees did the correct thing and there wasn't really any leg to stand on for that third beneficiary.
There's a lot of beneficiary. Cases. There's a lot of cases where people want to take it to court and I've seen it and you kind of say, look, you really think about it because... Mm-hmm. Know what the answer's kind of going to be. You might get an extra 10% or something like that of the estate, but the solicitor's happy to take it on because they're going to get paid a fee and happy to fight it for you, but it's not necessarily the best idea because you're just paying a solicitor for their advice and fighting it for you when you're not going to be better off anyway. You're probably going to lose money because of all the fees that gets involved with taking it to court.
What, just on a different issue, what on earth is going on with all these energy stocks at the moment? I mean, there just seems to be no consistency in that part of the bourse.
No.
On the one day, you go up 3%, oh, there's a great rebound, China had some good numbers.
Mm.
Then the next day, oh, something came out of Japan, it didn't look so good. Down they go again. It's so jittery that it seems to be, I'm a complete novice, but it seems to be market driven by speculators.
Yeah, and a very difficult one to invest in because, as we were talking about before, you know, as an investor, you want some certainty. What's happening? And in that sector, we just don't know. Mm-hmm. Where are energy prices going? Where's the oil price going? How long is it going to stay low? I mean, a lot of our energy stocks have fallen heavily, which is why I guess whenever there's any slight sign of positive news, people jump in off the back of that and you get these spikes in the price. And there has been a bit of a bounce back of late, but still way off their peaks. So, very difficult to invest in is
skittish,
the bottom line.
Skittish market, hard to pick the winner. Looking at the clock, I think that's about it for us this morning. Actually, gee, that came around quickly.
It did.
Busy morning.
Yeah, a lot of good callers today.
Yeah, indeed. So if people have some follow-up questions, where can they get in touch?
They can give us a call during the week, anytime in the office on 02-9258-7500. Or as you say, visit our website to have a look at how we operate, which is itfs.com.au.
Easy. All right, well... Until next time, next week or next time, Philip and Chris, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
Nice to be back with you. The team there from IT Financial Services, etc., etc. We will be back after the news at 1 o'clock. Great to have your company.